Hit it, boys.
Lovely, with your smile so warm and your cheeks so soft, there is nothing for me but to love you. And the way you look tonight.
Equan, what really happens in marriage? Okay, here's something that, when you first hear about it, does not sound like it can possibly be true. So let me preface everything you're about to hear by saying that the guy that you're about to hear from is not some isolated crank, but part of a movement. That he and his colleagues for decades have been scoring million-dollar grants from the National Institutes of Mental Health. They publish their findings in mainstream scientific journals. Other scientists have replicated their findings. They've essentially created a radically different and eminently helpful way of understanding marriage. Okay, here's what we're talking about. Dr. John Gottman takes couples, wires them up to devices that monitor their breathing and their heartbeats, sets them in front of video cameras, and then asks them to talk about something that they disagree about.
From a 15-minute videotape of a couple talking about an area of disagreement, we have an 85% probability of predicting what's going to happen to them in the next 4 years.
You mean if they'll still be together?
If they'll still be together or not. And also, if they're together, whether they'll be happy or miserable.
But that's not all. If he spends another hour or so and asks them to talk about how they met, what kinds of things they share,
then it goes up to 94%.
Now, I should be clear, he doesn't offer this as a service. You can't go to John Gottman, sit with your spouse for a 15-minute videotape, and then have him declare to you on the spot, this will be your marital fate. No. When he says that he can predict, he means it in a more science-y way. What he does is he videotapes couples, follows their marriages for years, and then, once he sees who stays together and who splits up, he goes back and tries to figure out what in the videos might have predicted that. And he's found a whole taxonomy of things that doomed couples do that happy couples don't. I don't know about you, but when I heard about this, I wanted to understand exactly what Gottman was seeing on those videotapes. And so I went out to visit him in Seattle to sit with him and watch some of America's unfunniest home videos.
But find out about that.
Find out what's the limit. I'll find the exact number.
See, so you don't know.
I know that there's a limit, but I'll find out the exact
number. That's what I've been telling you.
You might think it'd be easy to spot which couples in these videos are heading down the tubes. But in a study where Gottman's videos were shown to clergymen and therapists and other people who you would assume would be able to identify this kind of thing, they were unable to predict better than random chance which couples eventually divorced. Take this couple in their early 20s talking about their finances.
A month at the most and at the least. Estimated. Do the math. You don't even sit down and do that.
You don't even sit down and do it either.
I don't have to. I bring
you
home the money.
You told me not to manage it.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, to that. Because I noticed you never, because I've been asking you to do that.
Because, Martin, how can I do it until I need to get the first bill to know what I'm working with?
Watching them, to me, it looks pretty bad. They just don't let up.
Are they doing good or bad here?
Well, I don't see this as a negative interaction. A lot of people might, but we don't see our predictors of divorce here. We don't see contempt. We don't see him turning away, stonewalling, which is a particular guy thing to do. We don't see her insulting him. It could be a lot warmer. It could be a lot more supportive. But they've got to work this out. You know, newlyweds have a lot of fights, and this is respectful.
You just know what you know, and you block out everything you hear, and you just tell me the same thing. Yeah, that's how I feel.
I feel like you do that. I feel like I keep telling you, and you just want to. You only want to hear what you want to hear. You don't hear the good stuff. Like I'm telling you, Martin, you don't have to.
The way Dr. Gottman turns what look like the most intimate, meandering conversations into hard data that can be analyzed is really pretty simple. After the video was shot, two women in a tiny room down the hall from Dr. Gottman score the thing moment by moment on side-by-side computers. Every time the husband or the wife on the video shows anger, sadness, defensiveness, disgust, humor, neutrality, any of 20 different things, it gets coded in the computer alongside data of their heart rate and their breathing.
These people have so much affect going on. It's really hard because you have to make, you're watching it in real time. You have to make make your decision really fast. Is this person being contemptuous? Or wait, was that criticism?
Elizabeth Schotla and Catherine Schwartz spent months in training learning specific facial expressions, particular kinds of behavior, before they became reliable. Reliable meaning, in this case, their codes match those of fully trained people. I asked them to name the codes that they were punching in out loud as they scored one of the videos.
So I went to contempt, and then I went to neutral. You move back and forth all the time. Now, if you look at his eyes, he's on tension. He finished one of her sentences and sort of helped her along, which would be a high validation.
Every momentary interaction, affection, anger, stonewalling, contempt, gets assigned a number. 1 to 4 for the good ones, -1 to -4 for the bad ones.
So, you know, if they do a contempt, they get a -4. A disgust, they get a -4. And the computer just keeps track of when they happen and how long they last. Okay, yeah. So let's watch this conversation.
Gottman gets another video, and another couple comes up on the TV in black and white. Split screen. One camera's on his face, one on hers. Time code in the corner. They're talking about the fact that he is always late.
I don't believe you. You are really something.
It's like...
It's not funny.
Well, you can wake me up.
No, I don't want to wake you up. You don't like to hear my voice. It's just like the tone of your mother's. Well, that makes me feel real good, too. You don't like to talk to me.
So she's sarcastic and contemptuous. My tone is just like the sound of your mother. That makes me feel real good, too. That's dripping contempt, which is one of our best predictors of divorce. She gets a negative score at that instant, that time instant.
Tell me to get up.
What am I supposed to say? Please get up, dear. Would you get up?
Well, if you ask me to, I mean, that's
get
like
serious.
Me.
Right.
Now, think he has a lot of choices here. He can say, I can see why that would really hurt your feelings, my saying that.
Right, he could back off, yeah. He could de-escalate.
Exactly, he could de-escalate. He could hear her pain,
right,
which he doesn't.
So when Gottman and his colleagues make a little graph of all the scores that the man and the woman are getting, as you might imagine, it drops lower and lower and then just never comes back up. Picture a chart in the newspaper of the Dow Jones Industrial Average heading down and you pretty much have the idea. This kind of fight, the kind which gets worse and worse, is one of Gottman's findings for couples heading for a divorce. When they argue, it just escalates. They don't take a break. They don't see each other's side. They don't accept influence. That's a phrase that Gottman uses to mean that when one of them says something, it has influence on what the other one is thinking and saying.
Couples who are in what we call the attack-defend mode, where there's escalating quarrels, we can actually tell from the first 3 minutes of their conversation. Those couples will divorce very early, an average of 5 years after the wedding.
One of these studies had been going on for over a decade when Gottman and his colleagues started noticing a second group of couples from their sample getting divorced. And at first, the researchers could not figure out what was going on.
And our predictions were lousy. We couldn't figure out what was wrong with them at first because they seemed fine. They seemed really pretty neutral. They weren't escalating the quarrel, you know. They stayed together. They were fine. Boom, they divorced. 16 years after the wedding, they're divorcing. And then we're going back and saying, wait a minute, let's look a little more closely. And now you can see that there's no positive emotion really going on that's shared. And one of them may laugh, the other one doesn't laugh. One of them looks warm and interested, the other one's pulled away. There's just no fun. They don't seem to enjoy each other at all. Those are the couples where when you go to a restaurant, you see these couples who aren't talking to each other. That's them. They can last a long time being quite unhappy. They can be great parents. But especially when the kids leave home, they're at risk from really falling apart.
Gottman says that when they started this research, they had no idea which factors were going to be the ones that would predict divorce. Nobody had ever observed couples so closely and then followed them over time to see who stayed together and who did not. Therapists and pop psychologists had all kinds of theories as to what would make a good relationship. They were all completely untested. They thought that having lower expectations of marriage might make for happy marriages. Turns out to be untrue. They thought that good couples make I statements instead of you statements. Turns out, no. Many people thought, including Gottman and his colleagues, that anger would predict divorce. This idea is actually still around, that anger is destructive to any relationship, that it's against the scriptures, that it should be banned from marriages. In fact, the data shows happy, stable couples get angry all the time.
But their partners, you know, heard the anger. They responded to it. So, you know, a person might say, you know, in a good relationship, they might say, will you shut up and let me finish? Really angry, right? And their partner would say, all right, finish. Angry response. But then the person got to finish.
the anger didn't predict anything negative. You know, now in a relationship that wasn't working well, will you shut up and let me finish? Oh, I don't get to finish until you finish, is that it? Yeah. Well, that's just like what your mother would say. Oh, I'm not like my mother now, huh? Yeah, you are. You're yaddity, 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 yaddity. Contempt. An escalation to defensiveness and contempt, right? And that's the difference. The anger, you know, wasn't predicting anything negative. But the escalation, that was predicting things negative.
Marriage counseling had been around since the end of the Second World War, but in a sense, until the 1970s, until Gottman and this whole generation of researchers, it was really a pretty ad hoc business. Therapists would give couples all sorts of advice. Sometimes it was useful, sometimes it wasn't, but it wasn't based on scientific research. Until Gottman's generation, nobody had figured out an effective way to observe real marriages, successful and unsuccessful ones, and figure out what the happy, stable ones were doing that the unhappy divorcing ones weren't.
Where we were, it's kind of like when we were in the dark ages about healthcare and we were bleeding patients.
Diane Soley runs what amounts to the preeminent clearinghouse for marriage research and education called Smart Marriages in Washington, D.C.
And we were basing our premises on old thinking, and then these guys got all these gizmos, computers and video cameras and heart monitors and all kinds of gizmos, and they went at it. And so we got real accurate, for the first time, observational research information about what makes marriages succeed or fail.
One of the most radical findings in the studies is that the studies threw doubt on the idea that couples should split up if they had irreconcilable differences. All couples have irreconcilable differences, the studies proved. The ones that stay together and the ones that don't.
They found that all couples disagree basically the same amount. And they thought, well, maybe it's about what they disagree about. And they found, no, it's not that. It's not that some fight about money and some about sex and some about... They found that all couples basically disagree about the same issues.
Which are?
Money, kids, sex, others, and time. And others are things like, you know, who you're jealous of at the office or your in-laws. And time is like, what are we going to do on Sunday with our leisure time? And so if all couples disagree about the same amount and about the same issues, well, then what is it? And they found that it was that some couples understand they don't go to pieces when they're disagreeing. The success of marriage, they found out, was not based on finding someone with whom you agree on everything and finding your soulmate. It was how you're going to handle the inevitable disagreements that are going to come up, no matter who you marry.
Can I just say, it's not just me, right? It's hard to hear all this stuff without thinking about your own relationship. And that is especially true when it comes to the videos of happy and successful couples. They can be really humbling. Gottman found that the couples who stay together, when they talk about something they disagree about, for every negative thing that happens between them in the videos, they do 5 positive things. He cues up another tape.
Okay, so these guys are also talking about the problem of lateness in time. He is always late.
I feel kind of like it's dumping on you to discuss.
She's smiling as she says it.
You're being late.
No, I mean, that's one of my few weaknesses. I do have some weaknesses.
And he smiles as he says that.
But I don't disagree. There isn't much to argue about.
Okay, stop it for a second. Notice how she softened her startup. She didn't say, I am sick of you being late. She started off by saying, I feel it's kind of picking on you to start off talking about, you know, the lateness and, you know, that it's your problem, focusing on you. That's sweet.
In fact, the best couples in Gottman's studies, when they bring up something difficult, they do it in a way that does not make the other person defensive. Even talking about their disagreements, there's laughing, there's joking. This is important because when somebody feels attacked, feels defensive, their heart rate goes up. And basically, Gottman says, reason gets thrown out the window.
Heart's beating harder, the arteries start getting constricted and contracted, the body starts secreting adrenaline. And people just can't take in information very well. They can't process information. You can want to be a great listener. Once your heart rate gets above that level, you just can't do it. You know, and you tend to get into what we call the summarizing yourself syndrome. You keep repeating your own ideas over and over again.
And so, when Gottman watches these videos, he's intensely aware of when somebody criticizes and what it does to the other person's pulse. Like here, this wife tells her husband that a guy that they work with also hates his lateness.
And now I've learned to kind of just expect it and plan around it. Even race plans around it.
Yeah. He isn't as tactful as you are.
No.
They're both laughing.
See, there it is. I can be late, but he can't.
Just getting back at your mother for all those times she left you swinging on those swings.
You know, you may be right.
There she goes.
Yes, and I think you should grow up and not do that.
How his heart rate is going up.
I'm not your mother.
Of it, but as you say that,
now watch him start stuttering.
The reality of those times when she'd forget about me for hours. Boy. Well, those are very turbulent times for me.
See?
Yeah. God, I hated her for that.
He's looking down.
The message was very clear. Message was very clear. Poor life's complex. What about those shoes, anyhow?
These are not fancy shoes.
No,
these are old shoes.
They're pretty shoes, too.
Down.
They're nice.
Isn't that wonderful? Now, there's a repair. Now, a lot of therapists wouldn't consider that a repair.
Because he's changing the subject.
He's changing the subject. A lot of therapists probably would stop this guy and say, hey, wait a minute, we're talking about lateness in your mother. And, you know, what happened with the shoes? But there, his heart rate is going down as he's doing that. And she's letting him change the subject. And, you know, and they both laugh about the shoes. And his heart rate goes down. And then they go back to the lateness issue.
As you might expect, after these researchers noticed all these techniques that happy couples use when they disagree, it didn't take long before they started to try to teach those things to the rest of us. They created marriage education courses, which explain how to bring up a difficult subject without completely alienating your partner, how to keep yourself listening when your partner is criticizing you, how to take breaks when things get too hot, all the stuff that the good couples in the videos do. Lots of courses like this have sprung up. They generally take just 10 or 12 hours, and Diane Sully says they get results.
And we've spent millions of dollars of tax money researching these things, and we know that with a 10-hour class in this, you know, marriage education, we can reduce the divorce rate 50% 5 years out.
Reducing the divorce rate by 50%, or really anything at all by 50%, is the kind of track record that makes policymakers take notice. And in fact, it is exactly these kinds of marriage education courses that President Bush's $1.5 billion Healthy Marriage Initiative is providing free for welfare recipients. The Army is spending $1.8 million in courses for military families, a program called Building Strong and Ready Families. The courses are also popular in churches. In fact, studies show that couples learn the techniques better if they're taught by their own clergy. Some researchers say that this new interest and investment is great, but they caution that while Gottman's study and most of the other marriage studies get interesting results, they're still relatively small, as research goes. Anywhere from 30 to 300 couples, usually. Small enough that you can get random results that really might not have much meaning. One researcher told me that it's not like science has killer, airtight conclusions about marriage yet. It's more like we have decent preliminary findings. And the main reason these courses and government programs exist is not that the science is perfect, but that people want answers. They want answers now. They want help. And it seemed like we knew enough to act.